Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, again, I don't have any comments, but I have so much to say today that that's probably a good thing. Well, last time, Jeremiah Jocks and I discussed Charles Krauthammer's essay, Annals of Art. Now, if you missed that program, be sure to catch it either on SoundCloud or at thetrumpetunderline.com. And it really was a great program. It was really enjoyable to spend time with Jeremiah. Now, for today's program, I want to discuss Charles Krauthammer's superb essay titled, Are We Alone in the Universe? Now, even though this essay was first published in the Washington Post on December 29th, 2011, late in 2019, news events have made this an up-to-date topic again. Because we are so busy here at Herbert W. Armstrong College, we're getting ready for midterms, we're getting ready for spring break, there's all kinds of things going on. I don't have a special guest to help me do this today. However, I will be using some information from a recent article by Jeremiah Jocks. So even though he's too busy to be here today, we'll use him anyway. And of course, he knows I'm going to do this. But you can find this essay if you're following along in your book. It's on page 124 of Things That Matter. And I thought this was just a fabulous essay. In fact, I even wrote an article related to it for the trumpet.com. We're going to be quoting some of that as we go through this material as well. But let me just start out today with a quote from Charles Krauthammer. This is the very beginning of this Washington Post essay. It says, huge excitement last week. Two Earth-sized planets found orbiting a sun-like star less than 1,000 light years away. This comes 2 weeks after the stunning announcement of another planet orbiting another star at precisely the right distance within a habitable zone that is not too hot and not too cold to allow for liquid water and therefore possible life. If you think all the way back to 2011, we certainly know that this was exciting news, and they did find three planets. And of course, the discovery of Earth-sized planets has just, at that time, it really did kind of rock the science world. Of course, then other things come up and things get kind of, you know, pushed into the background. But really, there's like a dimension of people in this society that this is what they think about. This is what they want to understand. They want to know what's really going on out in the universe. Now, he goes on to say, unfortunately, the planets of the right size are too close to their sun and thus too scorching hot to permit Earth-like life. And the Goldilocks planet in the habitable zone is too large. At 2.4 times the size of Earth, it is probably gaseous like Jupiter. No Earthlings there. But it's only a matter of time, perhaps a year or two, estimates one astronomer, before we find one of the right size in the right place. So I think, again, Krauthammer is just, he's really kind of an exciting writer because he can take any subject and just delve into it and draw our attention into it. Now, what he's really talking about, when he talks about these Earth-sized planets, he's talking about exoplanets. I was also doing some research after reading this article, and I found this great piece in National Geographic. And actually, this was from March 2019. Now, National Geographic is a beautiful magazine. I don't necessarily agree with all of what they say, but I do agree with some of what they say, and then there's a lot of times I don't agree with anything they say. So, but again, it is, I think, a very beautiful magazine. The one thing that they did for me is they really kind of brought out this whole idea and explained what an exoplanet is. And I just want to, this article, again, this is from the March 2019 National Geographic, It's an extensive article. In fact, it's 33 pages, and it's full of color photographs. And the title of the article is, Who's Out There? And then the subscript says, We Are Not Alone. And so they were very definitive with it. But what is an exoplanet? And I thought the author, you know, had a great way of explaining it. He said, basically says, an exoplanet is namely all the planets in the universe except the ones you already know about revolving around the sun. So he's saying the exoplanets are exactly somewhat what Krauthammer says is these are Earth-like planets that just could seem to have the possibility of producing life or having life. It is kind of amazing what has been really going on out there in, let's say, the science world. Now, I just want to come back to Krauthammer's essay for a minute. And he says, he's going on in a very positive way. And he says, and at just the right time, as the romance of manned space exploration has waned, the drive today is to find our living, thinking counterparts in the universe. So I think we have to really take a clear look at that, or maybe stop and think about it, is there are a lot of people in this world think that there are other civilizations out there. And there are a lot of people that think that there are other civilizations and living beings out there. There is this drive in science to, well, as Krauthammer said, is to find these counterparts. And he said that at this point in 2011, he said the romance of unmanned exploration has waned. But then if anybody just followed President Trump's recent State of the Union message, he's formed what he calls the Space Force. And, of course, there's a lot of development that has to be done there yet. I think most people could think that's just militarily oriented or, you know, for the military or how to protect us. You know, there's other nations out there developing technology in space that they can use as, you know, as weaponry. And so certainly that's part of it. But it just seems like that President Trump also has some ideas of maybe rekindling that romance of, man-spaced exploration. But it is kind of interesting. And then also, I was reading this essay and I was reading the National Geographic article, I thought about the 1982 science fiction film E.T. And that was by Steven Spielberg. And, the whole idea behind that film was a small group of alien botanists secretly visited Earth under the cover of night. And they came here to gather plant specimens in a California forest. And, of course, you know, there is that joke about California being full of fruits and nuts. So maybe the whole idea behind E.T. was done by California. I think Steven Spielberg is actually from California. But anyway, no, I don't want to pick on the man. It goes on. It says government agents come on the scene. They find the alien ship. The aliens flee, but they leave, this young alien behind who is actually known as E.T. And it's really kind of funny. He meets a little boy named Elliot. And, of course, Elliot, gets his attention with having Reese's Pieces. He puts Reese's Pieces on the ground to attract him. But there are a lot of people, I think, that are really, really believe that there's E.T. out there and that actually E.T. is, you know, visiting Earth. It's not something that I think we should just look at as, well, there's these crazies on the fringe of society that think there's aliens out there. And I think even if we look at this essay, even Krauthammer, you know, I think believed that there were extraterrestrial beings out there. He goes on to say in his essay, he says, for all the excitement, however, the search betrays a profound melancholy. A lonely species in a merciless universe anxiously awaits an answering voice amid utter silence. And then he goes on to say that silence is maddening. And so I think that's really true. And if you really, you know, look at what's going on in science, and I think this article in National Geographic now, again, it's already almost a year old, and so you might have to get online to look at it. But it is, I think, worth reading, and it does tell us some pretty amazing things that science has developed to help us to see into the universe. But again, for all of the effort that's going on, there's been no contact. And there's been these things going on for a long time. And I think when we look at it, that the way Krauthammer feels is that why? Why is there no contact? And he says that silence is maddening. And he says not just because the compounds are feeling of cosmic isolation, because it makes no sense. As we inevitably find more and more exoplanets where intelligent life can exist, why have we found no evidence, no signals, no radio waves that intelligent life does exist? Now, I think that is something that probably a lot of people think about. Why it doesn't make sense. And if you really look at what's happening, I think in science, there's so many things that we can look to and say, wow, there's a lot going on out in the universe. The point is, Krauthammer gets into some really good things here, where he talks about how these scientists just can't figure it out. He goes on, I think, just to keep going down through this essay, he goes on and he says it's called the Fermi Paradox, after that great physicist who once asked, where is everybody? Or as was once elaborated, all our logic, all our anti-isocentrism assures us that we are not unique, that they must be there, and yet we do not see them. And so again, the universe really is full of mysteries. And of course, the question that maybe people don't want to think about, is it really possible that the Earth, and here we are in the Milky Way galaxy, and there's millions of galaxies, but here we are on the Earth, and it seems like, from the way things are going, or the things what we're trying to do, is there's no other planets out there that have life. In this National Geographic, so they have been developing these telescopes to help us see into the universe. And of course, science has devoted millions of dollars and millions of man hours. And just think about all the brain hours that have gone into developing this high technology. It's really astounding. I told you earlier I was going to read from Jeremiah Jock's article. He has a new article coming out in the April Trumpet magazine, and the title of that article is called "Opening a Rare Window into the Heavens." And essentially, what he talks about in this article is he gives the history of the development of the Hubble Space Telescope. And I did not realize until I read his article, and again, you're going to have to wait till the April issue to get this. I think some of this article, or all of this article, excuse me, will be coming up in the next maybe 3 or 4 weeks up on thetrumpet.com. But essentially, the idea for the Hubble telescope goes back as early as the 1920s. It may not have been the Hubble telescope at that time, but it wasn't until 1946 that we had the rocket technology to put a telescope out into, let's say, above the atmosphere, because the atmosphere really does blind us to what we can really see. And then it really isn't until like 1977 that the program really got started to develop the Hubble. And then again, obviously, then it was in the late 1970s, they put the Hubble telescope into space. And then it had optics problems, and then we went and we fixed it. They had this amazing program to have two astronauts fly up to the Hubble, and then they fixed it. And then once they got those optics fixed, it was incredible what it revealed. They've been looking for these exoplanets. And let me just tell you, even since the Hubble, there have been other telescopes, and there's another one called the Kepler. And I'm just going to go to this National Geographic magazine. And remember now, this is Krauthammer's essay is 2011. This is 2019. So we're years later. And they put the Kepler Space Telescope, they launched it in 2009. And essentially that telescope, if you would take your arm, go out on a clear, cloudless night, and you would take your hand and you block your eyes, you know, that would block a certain part of the Milky Way. So they turned this Kepler Space Telescope just onto a section of stars like that, and they found 4,000 exoplanets. Let me just read what this article says. Today we have confirmed about 4,000 exoplanets. The majority were discovered by Kepler Space Telescope launched in 2009. Kepler's mission was to see how many planets it could find orbiting some 150,000 stars in one tiny patch of sky, about as much as you can cover with your hand with your arm outstretched. But its ultimate purpose was to solve a much more frighted question. Are places where life might evolve common in the universe or vanishingly rare, leaving us effectively without hope of ever knowing whether another living world exists? But essentially, from what they found, is an amazing answer. And this is what the author says there. He says, Kepler's answer was unequivocal. There are more planets than there are stars, and at least a quarter are Earth-sized planets in the star's so-called habitable zone, where conditions are neither too hot nor too cold for life. With a minimum of 100 billion stars in the Milky Way, that means there are at least 25 billion places where life could conceivably take hold in our galaxy alone, and our galaxy is one of trillions. And so to me, that is amazing that they have found these planets. Now, the one thing I don't agree with, obviously, is that life evolves. But the thing is what science are trying to do now, scientists are trying to do now is they're trying to figure out if there's life on some of these planets. And we still have trouble seeing deep enough to see if there's any signs of civilization like buildings, or is there bridges, or is there rivers, or are there lakes. We still are limited. And of course, Krauthammer, he talked about the Fermi paradox. And that's what that scientist says, well, why aren't we getting any answers? And then he also talks about the Drake equation. And he says the Drake equation, this was developed in 1961, tries to quantify the number of advanced civilizations in just our own galaxy. To simplify slightly the number of the stars in the galaxy, multiplied by the fraction that form planets, multiplied by the average number of planets in the habitable zone, multiplied by the fraction of these that give birth to life, multiplied by the fraction of these that develop intelligence, multiplied by the fraction of these that produce interstellar communications, multiplied by the fraction of the planet's lifetime during which civilizations survive. He goes on to say, modern satellite data applied to the Drake equation suggests that the number should be very high. This is before they discovered there were 4,000. Actually, there are 25, I think, if I just remember that correctly. It says 25 billion places. So essentially, I think Krauthammer saw this before even some of the scientists did, that there's a lot of real estate out there, but yet there's no evidence of life. So I think the big question that we really need to stick with is it possible that Earth is the only living planet that has life? Now, it is amazing. Science, it doesn't want to face that question. It's frightening to them. And let me just read to you what they're doing now. Again, now this is another new telescope that is it's supposed to go up, I think, next year. And it's called TESS. And of course, its full name is Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS. And it's a NASA space telescope. I think this is an older one. Excuse me. There's another new one. It says, like Kepler, TESS looks for a slight dimming in the luminosity of a star when a planet passes or transit in front of it. TESS is scanning nearly the whole sky with the goal of identifying about 50 exoplanets with rocky surfaces like Earth that could be investigated by more powerful telescopes coming online, beginning with the James Webb Space Telescope, which NASA hopes to launch in 2021. TESS is already up there, but they're getting ready to launch another one in 2021. And so if you think about all the effort that's going into it, is people cannot face that question. they can't face it is life only on Earth. And, you know, they keep spending more and more money on it. Now, Krautheimer goes on to say, in other words, the silent universe is conveying not a flattering lesson about our uniqueness, but a tragic story about our destiny. It is telling us that intelligence may be the most cursed faculty in the entire universe, an endowment not just ultimately fatal, but on the scale of cosmic time, nearly instantly so. And here's the reason why he says this, I'm going to go step up a paragraph, where he asks again, so why the silence? And here's what he says. He says, Carl Sagan, among others, thought that the answer is to be found tragically in the final variable, the high probability that advanced civilizations destroy themselves. And so what he's saying, what Krauthammer, the only way he can answer it, he doesn't want to answer the question, or he can answer the question, are we alone? And if we are alone in the universe, why are we alone in the universe? You know, why with all these other planets out there, why is Earth the only planet with life on it? And, of course, Carl Sagan, again, I think he has died now. But he was saying, well, the reason why we're not getting an answer is because all the advanced civilizations have destroyed themselves. And the reason why they bring that up is, let's take an honest look at us. Let's take an honest look at human beings. And this is what Krauthammer says. He says, this is not mere theory. Look around. On the very day that astronomers rejoiced at the discovery of two Earth-sized planets, the National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity urged two leading scientific journals not to publish details of lab experiments that had created a lethal and highly transmittable form of bird flu virus, lest the fateful knowledge fall into the wrong hands. And so essentially what Krauthammer is saying, well, the more frightening thing to look at is, can we or are we as a civilization going to destroy ourselves? And he goes on to say, wrong hands, human hands. This is not just the age of holy terror, but also the threshold of an age of anti-hyperproliferation. Nuclear weapons in the hands of the half-mad tyrants like North Korea and radical apocalyptic Iran are only the beginning. Lethal biologic agents may soon find their way into the hands for those whom genocidal pandemics loosed upon infidels are the royal road to redemption. So think about that. Carl Sagan has said, hey, there's no one answering because they've already destroyed themselves. And Krauthammer says, we know that's a reality we have to deal with all the time. And I know just recently in the news, and I just saw it last night on Fox, coronavirus is they suspect that it was built in a Chinese lab. And somehow it's gotten out, and it's really causing havoc. And of course, some scientists are saying, oh, no, that's not possible. But then I know that Laura Ingraham said it's very possible when you consider China and you consider how, you know, they've been and how they've lied and how they've hid things. And of course, we know that China is rising. They are developing their military. And of course, we know that these biologic weapons are going to be used. They already have been used. And so we not only have the nuclear problem, we also have, bioweapons that can harm us. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. Next time, I'll finish my discussion of Charles Krauthammer's essay, Are We Alone in the Universe? Now, we are moving closer to the end of our series titled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. We are reading selected portions of his book of essays titled Things That Matter. Now, there's still more to come, so you can still get yourself a copy of this book. You can buy it at Amazon.com, or you can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.